Good morning, church. Man, it's good to see you all. It's good to be together, and it's a special, special Sunday for Forest Mills. We celebrate our high school graduates and what they've achieved and what they've got to look forward to as well. We're thankful for their presence and their family's presence as you're with us here today. That's a big deal. I was really glad to see we had one of our, an update from Ken and Judy. Now, if you know Ken and Judy, you know that they've recently moved into an assisted living facility, and this last week they celebrated their 65th wedding anniversary. And on their 65th wedding anniversary, the facility, their home threw a prom, and Ken and Judy were named the king and queen of their prom. I just thought that was absolutely fantastic. I know you'd want to hear about how they're doing, and if you're joining us online this morning, Ken and Judy, we love and miss you, and know that we're praying for you guys. I just thought that was really special update from them. Let me tell you a story to get started this morning. It goes all the way back to 1940, and it has to do with engineers. So some of y'all pay special attention to this. This is pertinent to you. So there were some engineers in Washington State, and they completed what was purported to be one of the greatest achievements of modern engineering. It was called the Tacoma Narrows Bridge. It was absolutely stunning. It stretched across across Puget Sound, right there near Tacoma, Washington. At the time, this was the third longest suspension bridge in the world. I mean, it was massive. People were, of course, very proud of it. Newspapers celebrated it. It was sleek. It was elegant. It was modern. It was a symbol of the progress and the ingenuity, and it was just an amazing thing. There was just one small problem. The problem was that almost immediately after it opened, the bridge started moving, and not a little. I mean, it was moving a lot. Drivers reported that the roadway was rolling underneath them like ocean waves. People said that they began to feel seasick while driving on the road. And it was a big deal. On a windy day, you could see the bridge moving. Locals nicknamed it Galloping Gertie. And at first, mostly people just kind of laughed about it, but there's actual footage of cars driving across that are bouncing up and down on the bridge while people stand there. And it's like it's an amusement park ride. I mean, people just thought it was kind of a wild deal. But underneath all this impressive engineering was a problem that the engineers had underestimated. The bridge had been built to hold plenty of weight. It could handle the weight. What it could not handle was the forces of nature, specifically the wind. And so on November 7th, 1940, this was just 4 months after it opened, November 7th, 1940, strong winds hit the bridge, and it began to twist violently, and it tore itself apart and fell into Puget Sound. The steel snapped, the suspension cables failed, everything failed, and it fell into Puget Sound. But here's the thing. The engineers who built it were really smart people, brilliant people. The bridge itself was a modern of incredible achievement, right? It was absolutely amazing. So how could that have gone so wrong? In a way, the book of Genesis sort of feels like that moment. That moment where something good just kind of falls apart piece by piece, gets demolished. Last week we saw how Adam and Eve sort of began that cycle of destruction, the endlessly ravenous cycle of sin. And it started, of course, with their disobedience. They ate from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. If you missed that story, it's pretty important. Genesis 3, go back and catch up. So they eat from this tree of the knowledge of sin and good and evil, and for their sin, they were punished. Among other things, they brought pain and suffering into the world, and they also were cast out of the Garden of Eden. It was the only home they'd ever known. It was the perfect place to live, had all the food, had all the shelter, and most importantly, it had close fellowship with God. And they get cast out of that and away from the tree of life. So the paradise that was the Garden of Eden is now their former home. And that's where we kind of pick up the story this week, the story of Adam, the story and Eve, and the story of humanity. And really and truly, this is your story. And it's my story. We ought to find ourselves right here in the story. And this is where it picks up in Genesis chapter 4. Said Adam had relations with his wife Eve, and she became pregnant and gave birth to Cain. And she said, with the help of the Lord, I have brought forth a man, which some people think that's where Cain's name comes from. It's from a Hebrew word. But anyway, later she gave birth to his brother Abel. Now Abel, the younger brother, right, he kept flocks, and Cain worked the soil. In the course of time, Cain brought some of the fruits of the soil as an offering to the Lord. And Abel also brought an offering, fat portions from some of his firstborn of his flock. Now the Lord looked with favor on Abel and his offering, but on Cain and his offering, he did not look with favor. So Cain was very angry, and his face was downcast. Now, as we go through Genesis 4 here this morning, I want you to notice there's going to be a lot of firsts. Cain, the first baby we're told of being born, that's pretty big. And the first brother there, Abel, we get the first division of labor. I don't know if you noticed that or not, but first time we see people having different jobs, right? Cain's a farmer. Abel is something of a shepherd. Each of them brings the first offerings to the Lord that we're told about. And I think that's significant. I think that's really important. Because even though they were living out, in fact, they'd never lived in the Garden of Eden. They never knew what it was like to walk with God in the garden. But even though they didn't have that, they still, some things about the Garden of Eden hadn't changed. As human beings, they still sought God, right? They still worshiped God despite not having the same sort of fellowship. They didn't get to talk with God the way Adam and Eve had, but they still longed for him. They wanted to be accepted by him. So despite all of the destruction that came about with the fall, it did not change one really important thing. It did not change our longing for God. We are sinful. You're sinful. I'm sinful, and we mess things up all the time. We disobey all the time. And no matter how far you go, and no matter how low you go, you can take your life in some really bad directions. But it does not change the fact that you still long for God. Even people who don't acknowledge God, or who don't believe in God, who don't follow God, who are not Christians in any shape, form, or fashion, there is a hole in their heart that cannot be filled by anything but God, try as they may. So it's a good desire. And so here's Cain and Abel, and they desire God, right? That's a good desire. And we can already see, even with this good desire, that something's really wrong. Cain's worship, his good desire, gets tangled up with pride and comparison and resentment. And that's the thing about sin. That's what we're learning about sin here as we go along through Genesis. It's teaching us what sin is like. It's teaching us about sin is that sin kind of gets in the way of everything, even the good stuff. So even the good things become distorted when our heart is disconnected from God. All the good stuff that we want, So you have desires for health and for prosperity and for family and for love. And all those good desires, all those things that's good for you to want, right? Right desires. They get twisted by pride and selfishness and greed and lust. Sin just gets in the way of everything. And that sin has consequences. The sin bears fruit, right? It grows up. It produces something. So let's see what this sin bears here in Genesis 4. Then the Lord said to Cain, "Why are you so angry? Why is your face downcast? If you do what's right, won't you be accepted? But if you do not do what's right, sin is," I love this phrase, "sin is crouching at your door. It desires to have you, but you must rule over it." Now Cain said to his brother Abel, Let's go out to the field. And while they were in the field, Cain attacked his brother Abel and killed him. God warns Cain, sin is crouching at your door. So this is one of the very first pictures in the Bible of what sin is like, the way it's described. It is, and the way it's described is it's like a wild animal, right? It's predatory. It's hungry, and it is patient, waiting for the first opportunity to pounce. Yes, sin is animalistic, but if you are paying attention to your own life, this ought to also be familiar. I mean, see if this sounds familiar to you. Things are going well in your life. You're doing pretty good. I mean, you're doing the stuff you ought to be doing, and you're living in right relationship with the people who are in your life. You're living in right relationship with God. And then something happens. Could be any number of things. Just something small, maybe. Something to distract you. And maybe you just miss a small step. Not even a big deal. But you just take one small misstep. And then wham! I mean, next thing you know, you are flat on your back and looking up at the sky and wondering what has happened. It comes out of the blue, just like that. And we don't know how our lives went so wrong so fast, how we went from things being good to things just a small misstep to just totally annihilated. And that's exactly what happens here in this story with Cain and Abel. And all of a sudden, the first brothers go from, your offering's loved more than my offer. I mean, that's a kind of a deal, but it's not like a deal breaker. It goes from that, we get the first murderer and the first murder victim, right? The very first pair of brothers we get become the very first murderer and the very first victim. Harmony, family harmony has become competition. Relationships that's supposed to be so good, relationships have become rivalry. Image bearers of God have become stone cold killers, threats. Cain, what Cain wanted was not bad. What Cain wanted was acceptance. He wanted recognition. He wanted significance. And instead, Cain lost. All those good desires that he had because of sin became bad things, and he lost stuff. He lost his brother, he lost his family, he lost his only home he's ever had, he's lost his peace, he is cursed to become a stranger and a wanderer. I mean, that's the exact opposite of what he wanted. And so we're starting to pick up on the pattern of what sin is and what sin does, that pattern that we see with sin now, because sin always destroys what it promises to deliver. That's the thing about sin. It's telling you, if you will just do it my way, it's faster, it's easier, you'll get exactly what you want. This is how you want to get it. And what you get is something else entirely. It's a whole big mess. So that pattern of sin, really Genesis 4, by the way, is a it's really just a genealogy. It's just so-and-so begat so-and-so begat so-and-so begat so-and-so. You just happen to get stories about some of the so-and-sos. This is a story about Cain. It's not a story about Abel, it's a story about Cain. Cain's the only one that God talks to. On a couple of occasions, God talks to him. We get the story of Cain, and then after the story of Cain, we get a story of a couple other people. And this pattern with sin, it gets repeated, and it builds, and it builds, and it builds over and over and over here in chapter 4. So if you keep reading down through chapter 4, Cain, because he's cursed, he's got to leave his family now, kind of like his parents were cursed, had to leave the Garden of Eden. Cain is cursed, he's got to go out and wander. And he goes out and wanders, and he finds a wife. Where did Cain's wife come from? I don't know. Don't ask me that. God doesn't say, I don't need to know, I don't guess. And I think that probably God made some other folks. And Adam and Eve may have been the first, but that doesn't mean they were the only. So there's some other folks out there. Cain wanders out, he finds a wife. They have a son, Enoch. And Cain builds the very first city that he names after his son, Enoch. First, another first there, right? First city. Let's all live together, and let's build permanent structures, and we can work together. That's a good thing, right? The descendants of Enoch do all sorts of great things. One of them, Jabal, he becomes what's known as the father of nomadic herding. The people who live in tents and herd animals. I mean, that's what his descendants do. They live in tents and they take care of animals. And so he's the father of that. I mean, it's a whole economy right there. And another one, his brother Jubal becomes the father of kind of music, lute players and harp players. They're the artistic people, the ones who express the emotions of joy or heartbreak or whatever it is. That's what you do in music there. And another brother is Tubal-Cain. And Tubal-Cain becomes the father of bronze and iron working. And so you get these stories about these people, just really briefly, a sentence or two, telling them what they did and how they contributed. It's like they're laying the foundation for what's going to become, what we would call it, civilization. Right? This is all progress. Things are getting better. I mean, you've got cities and communities and families and economies and technology. That's what we want. That's what we build. I mean, when you meet that special young lady or that special young man, you don't dream that, hey, we're just going to stay living in the dorm or working at our cruddy jobs and we're going to never be together. No. We're going to have a home together, and we're going to have a family together, and we're going to have good jobs, and things are going to get better, and we're going to, I mean, you just, that's what you dream of, right? This is what we want. It is like, if you think about it, it's like kind of like they're building their own paradise. We can't go back to Eden, but we can build Eden. It's sort of like what they lost in Eden. They're getting safety and significance and purpose and place, but in the middle of all this progress, given another story, not Cain this time. It's one of Cain's descendants, a guy named Lamech. And Lamech, this is what Lamech does. He said to his wives, he has a couple wives, Adah and Zillah, and says, listen to me, wives of Lamech, hear my words. I have killed a man for wounding me, a young man for injuring me. Now, the way this is written out here in this portion of Genesis 4, it's clear this is a poem, probably a song. And civilization is being born, right? Progress is being made. But with all this progress, a human achievement is sort of paired with moral collapse. That's the story here in Genesis 4. Now, to be clear, I don't think Genesis is saying or condemning creativity or invention or culture, any of that. There's nothing wrong with those things in and of themselves. The problem is, and pay attention here, we can never make the mistake of thinking we're making things better without God. Don't ever, ever make that mistake. all the beautiful music and the sophisticated tools and great economic steps we made, all of the, we would say, life-changing technology and problem-solving legislation and upgraded defenses and all of the great things that we're doing, they are never, ever, ever, never, ever, ever, never, ever, ever going to fix what is wrong. They are never going to fix what is wrong because the real problem is a sin problem. And headline news here, you and me, we can't fix the sin problem. And people in Washington can't fix the sin problem, and people in Hollywood can't fix the sin problem. And the people who are selling you stuff at Walmart, they can't fix the sin problem. And the people who are, you can buy it direct from on TV, they sure can't fix the sin problem, but they can charge you $19.95 for shipping and handling. Right? In fact, we're just making stuff worse. Cain, let's go back to the story of Cain here. What you may have, I didn't read it out loud, but does anybody know what did Cain do after he murdered Abel? Do you remember? He hid the body. Good plan. Cain hid the body. Who he hid it from? Parents, I guess. Maybe from God. Of course, God finds him out. But his descendant, Lamech, also kills a guy. What does he do? I have written a great song about this guy I killed. In just a few generations, we go from hiding sin to celebrating sin. That's how far we've gone. We think we're building Eden. We think we're building paradise, and we are running in the opposite direction. We're not building Eden. We are crafting our own destruction. And in the middle of this violence, what the world has descended into, even as we're making progress, in the middle of what we have descended into, of this violence and this turning away from God, God still seeks us out. And I love the way Genesis 4 ends. Because it ends this way. Just a couple of short verses. Adam had relations with his wife again. She had another son and called his name Seth. For she said, God has granted me another offspring instead of Abel because Cain killed him. Now, to Seth was also born a son. And he called his name Enosh. And at that time, men began calling on the name of the Lord. So, another way, in the midst of all this chaos and destruction and violence and evil, another way emerges. In the midst of the darkness, another way emerges. There's now two ways of living. Not just one anymore, there's now two ways of living. Building your own Eden or calling on the name of the Lord. There's two ways to do it. You can build it yourself, or you can call on the name of the Lord. And it is no accident, it's through the line of Seth and Enosh that we get the lineage of Jesus. Jesus comes through them because Jesus doesn't just help humanity improve civilization. He restores relationship to God. In the early 1990s, so not the 1940s anymore, we've made progress. Early 1990s, this group of scientists in Arizona launched what was one of the most ambitious experiments ever undertaken. They built something that's called Biosphere 2. Does anybody remember this? They built Biosphere 2. It was just this massive enclosed system. It was about 3 acres, all under glass, all enclosed. Inside, they created kind of a miniature world. You've got forests and rivers and farmland and oceans and animals and all these carefully balanced atmospheres. And this, their goal, pretty ambitious goal, was could we build a self-contained paradise? That was the goal. Can we build a self-contained paradise? Can we create a perfectly balanced world capable of supporting humans indefinitely? I mean, this has big ramifications for not just some places in Earth, but, you know, if we ever want to travel outside of Earth and live on some other planet. And so these eight people, sealed themselves into this place for 2 years. 8 people, 2 years, never getting outside the bubble. Oh, man. we think we're crafting heaven. That sounds like hell on earth to me. I mean, that is so. But it's the future, right? So people imagined that one day we were going to be building these kind of environments in space or other planets. So we're going to do this for science. And this was human ingenuity at its absolute peak. And then things started slowly kind of going wrong. Oxygen levels began to drop. Get all those plants, but oxygen levels began to drop. And then insects went bonkers. I mean, they multiplied like insects, I guess, but they went nuts. They could not slow it down. And then the crops, the food you're eating, those started struggling. And then the people, you add stress to tight quarters. Sure enough, relationships between the people became deeply strained and divided. Like, what's going on here? And eventually the oxygen got so low, they started having to pump oxygen in. And they didn't even know why. Just to keep everybody alive, they were having to pump more oxygen in. And what was really interesting is that there were trees in there. Of course, you got to have trees. And they put these trees in there, and these trees shot up rapidly. You're like, oh, well, you know, everything else is struggling, but the trees, they are doing great. And they did. They matured really quickly and grew really big. But then they collapsed. These trees started collapsing shortly after they matured. So eventually they called it, you know, listen, we're done. And scientists investigated. And this is what they found out. Kind of the opposite of the bridge problem. Inside the biosphere, there was no wind. No wind. And without the wind, there was no need for resistance. There was no stress. Trees never developed strong roots. They never grew a hardy wood grain to resist against the wind. So they looked great. They looked healthy. And they were so weak. So that's the thing about our endeavors, is that we can put our best foot forward. We can really endeavor. We can imitate Eden, but we cannot recreate it. We can construct the environment. We can design the systems. We can engineer incredible things, but we cannot heal what is broken inside of us. We can't fix what's broken in creation. We can't deal with the real problem. The only way to deal with the real problem is not going to come through your efforts or my efforts or the government's efforts or the scientists' efforts or through the collective pulling together of humanity like a good movie does. The only way to solve the real problem is through Jesus Christ and through Him alone. I mean... It sounds so good if you say we worked real hard on it and we fixed it. I would love to tell you that if you have a sin problem, then what you need to do is talk to David Elrod and he will just patch you right up. Or if you've got a sin problem, what you need to do is talk to me or talk to my wife or talk to any one of these other people. But we can't fix it either. Our best effort is to point you at the one who can handle the sin problem. And it's not us. So this morning, my prayer for us as a congregation is that we will be the ones to point to the only solution through the line of Seth and Enosh, their descendant, Jesus Christ, who doesn't just fix what's broken with humanity. He restores us to relationship with God. If we can pray for you, encourage you, lift you up, if you're ready to become a child of God and give your life to Jesus Christ, won't you come now as we stand and as we sing?